Well, we're now getting a slightly clearer picture of what thinking turned upside down actually looks like. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, it's good to be back with you here in the studio. With all the things going on, and you already know this, I've been busier than a one-armed paper hanger, as they say, and you are the same. Yours is all legislative. Mine is all moving my home and my business. And yesterday we closed a mortgage, and a week before we'd closed the mortgage, because I now have two mortgages. I own two houses for a short time. So if anybody's looking for a house in Westerville, make checks payable to. No, we won't do that. We won't cut the realtor out. She did such a great job with us. We will not cut her out. I know you got tons of stuff going on in the Ohio legislature, and you know it's odd. We're getting ready. We're in an election year, and normally in an election year, in a national election year, a lot of stuff doesn't get done because everybody's so scared to make a misstep or do the wrong thing or give their opponents something they can use against them in the media, that not really only feel good stuff usually gets done. Naming the day after somebody for rescuing a dog out of a storm grate or something really innocuous. But this year, things are in flux because the news media is sort of taking it on the chin. And, you know, for years there was one quote unquote conservative outlet and that conservative outlet, which I know we'll talk about later, is sort of taking it on the chin and sort of making it look like they're not necessarily so conservative. So we'll get into that whole thing, but it's been interesting to watch in the time that I have to put in to watch it, which isn't much.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying, Charles, and I think maybe many of our listeners might understand. This is for the fact that, you know, down in our area, we had like a Snowmageddon came in last week. We kind of joked and laughed about it. And in some areas, it was very serious. But, you know, in our area, like I said, I think we got about maybe 8 or 9 inches total of snow, which we're recording this on Thursday before our Saturday program. 95% of it has melted off because of warmer temperatures. We've been getting back to the real pace of life. And for me, that means the legislature's back in session. And I've been spending the last few days between running all over the state with meetings with clients and then sitting and listening to our elected officials, debate and discuss matters that are both at the same time important and then maybe not so important in the grander scheme of things. It has been a quite a whirlwind. So, yeah, so we're now just kind of settling back down. I'm kind of glad we're getting started here. And because there have been a few things that have been happening over the last week or so. And one of the key things, and it really gets to some of the work that I've been doing this week, we've had some news that have come out. If people have been paying attention, as they know, starting back last July, there was a series of videos that were released to the public via YouTube by a group called the Center for Medical Progress, based out of California. And they had gone undercover, posing as buyers for the medical industry in order to determine if the nation's largest abortion provider, Planned Parenthood, was actually violating federal laws and state laws by profiting from the sale of fetal tissue and fetal body parts that are the consequence of the abortions that they provide in the United States. Well, video evidence is starting to show that Planned Parenthood is definitely actively engaged in working with third-party buyers to harvest fetal tissue. And Congress has held some investigations and really, and Trey Gowdy's committee really just came up with, didn't go anywhere and do anything. And people are starting now to wonder about Gowdy's commitment on these things.
As they should.
As they should. And So things have been moving forward on this, but this week, Chuck, there was a major change in the terms of the debate. You see, because the district attorney in Houston, Texas, decided that they were going to launch an investigation and to basically bring the evidence regarding the Houston Planned Parenthood, which there that was one of the ones that was caught on videotape, you know, basically admitting to doing certain practices that at the very least would be indicative of violating federal bans on certain abortion practices. So the prosecuting attorney had the courts convened a grand jury, and the grand jury took to hear evidence. Well, Chuck, there was a major surprise that came out of that, because what happened was the grand jury in Houston didn't do anything with Planned Parenthood. Matter of fact, what they did was they exonerated Planned Parenthood and then turned around and issued indictments for prosecution against David DeLeiden and I believe the lady's name was Sandra Merritt, who are the two principal people behind the Center for Medical Progress's investigation for, and I quote, Chuck, tampering with governmental records. Tampering with governmental records. Now, you know, and the pro-abort cohort is screaming and cheering madly right now that they, you know, because their meme for the entire time this is coming out where it was that the videos were faked and they were tampered with. So what they're really doing is, you know, they let it fly out there the first day or two, just the words tampering with governmental records, because they had been setting up a meme that these videos had been tampered with. Well, that's not what this grand jury was bringing indictments for. The governmental records that the grand jury was talking about was the fact that DeLeiden and his cohort had false identification papers, driver's licenses, that they used to show the officials at Planned Parenthood who they supposedly were. You know, they had spent time setting up a false front, a fake biomedical company, and fake IDs for the two of them in order to get in and get information. Now, Chuck, you know, you and I want to step back here, because in one sense, I don't like the idea of somebody forging a driver's license. I think that's going beyond and actually breaking the law in order to try to do something good. And I'm not sure that I necessarily can condone that part of it. However, I also certainly cannot condone the whole idea of giving Planned Parenthood a free pass when they're on videotape basically admitting to illegal activity because you're so tied up about the way in which people gain their information.
Well, let's be realistic about this, Barry. People work undercover all the time.
Yes, they do.
And they fake documents all the time.
Absolutely.
And reporters fake documents all the time. Now, I saw kind of there's an article in the New York Post. Look who's cheering the jailing of journalists. And what's interesting about this is they were talking about the fact that their journalistic ethics journal, their ethics manual, tells them they're not allowed to essentially fake IDs and that kind of thing in order to get journalism done. Does anybody really believe that they don't go undercover and fake an identity to get information? I don't. I think that's regularly ignored, and I think this is one of those places where journalists know when you need to do that and when you don't. Because if you're going into a place where you know that your exposure as a reporter will make the very thing you're trying to uncover stop happening, you're not going to do that. Now, in most cases, a journalist will not go undercover as, like, say, into a drug ring or something like that. But they will go in and do sting operations on stuff like people who are abusing animals. Maybe like cockfights, dogfights, that kind of thing. Now, which is worse? I will ask you the question. a cockfight and a dogfight, or the dismembering of unborn children.
Exactly.
Now, normally, I do not
know which one's worse. It's going to be the latter.
I do not care for the end justifies the means argument. However, had these people come out and stated that they were doing the job that journalists would not do, and you and I both know the fact that had this been left up to mainstream journalism, this job never, ever, ever would have been done.
Well, absolutely not. And again, and you know, we applaud the Center for Medical Progress for doing what they did. I think that yes, there probably is some flexibility and latitude. However, the big problem that Dalyden has is that they are not stringers or staff reporters for what the grand jury would recognize as a quote-unquote legitimate journalistic institution. They bill themselves as citizen journalists, which, honestly, welcome to the 21st century. The old gray lady is on life support, and most of the daily newspapers are shrinking in size and sharing content because online media and citizen journalism is starting to take over. You know, it's you're seeing the dying of the dinosaurs and the rise of the next generation of news gathering and reporting coming up. And I don't believe that the grand jury is maybe up into the 21st century in that respect. However, what we really have here is the fact that during the federal, and this is something that was brought out, and I'll get to what happened yesterday over in the Senate here in just a minute, but the congressional hearings relating to Planned Parenthood back in the fall did one thing, if nothing else, they did one thing that and this is what frustrates me with pro-abortion activists who continue to use this meme, although it's been found disingenuous. They keep saying that these were tampered with videos and that they were edited videos and these videos were made in such a way in order to make Planned Parenthood look bad. However, during the congressional investigation, two independent research companies that verify whether or not videos are tampered with or edited in such ways, both came back and gave a clean bill of health to the Center for Medical Progress videos. That they had not been, the only thing they'd done was they had excerpted them when they put them on YouTube because they had actually almost 3 hours of videotape and they didn't put the whole thing up on YouTube.
There's a disclaimer there, and basically what it is that this video has been edited for time, not for content.
Exactly, for time only. But the pro aborts want to spin that. And as a matter of fact, you know, I'm going to get into this in a minute. But here we have a grand jury in Houston, Texas, who is pushing, you know, now they're turning around and indicting the activists who went after getting this information from Planned Parenthood. So if found guilty of tampering with a governmental record by the courts or by a prosecutor, Dalyden and Merritt could each face 20 years in prison.
Well,
now, Chuck, I think that's absolutely ridiculous because that also means that Planned Parenthood will get away scot-free, and when people at Planned Parenthood should be being put in prison for their roles in the murder of defenseless children, in their roles in the ghoulish selling of baby body parts and selecting pregnant women whose characteristics level of development of their unborn children best match what the buyers are looking for. Chuck, this is a situation where thinking's being turned upside down, but this isn't the first time we've had upside down thinking coming out of Houston, Texas. Here's a for instance. The district attorney in Houston, Texas, ran as a pro-life, basically a quote, proud pro-life Texan mother of two. Okay?
Yep.
However, the record for this district attorney And now is, okay, bumbling an investigation against Planned Parenthood that basically was handed to you on a platter and getting your best sources indicted on a technicality. And also, basically having an abortionist who was, they were bringing on charges for, doing late term abortions, which are illegal in Texas. And to the point where that doctor got cleared because of the way this DA handled the case. Now, we found out some new interesting information yesterday, I think this came out, that would be Wednesday, that one of the senior people in this DA's office is a board member for Planned Parenthood of Greater Houston.
Oh my gosh, Barry. I mean, talk about a conflict of interest. And if I dug up an article from Reuters that basically says the grand jury never even voted on an indictment against Planned Parenthood. They supposedly looked at all the evidence and never even voted on whether or not to indict Planned Parenthood. This stinks to high heaven. I'll be quite honest with you. It's got a stink. Running as a pro-life person is not the same as being pro-life.
Right. Thank you, Barry. Chuck, you are just putting the candle on the cake there, because that's been a big problem for a very long time, is that voters are easily swayed because they've not sought out or asked the tough questions of candidates. It's probably what happened here in Houston with the DA. And now you have a DA who's not only let an abortionist who was performing late-term abortions. And Chuck, I don't think there's any way you can mistake. Okay, you've got records. Okay, this child was in the third. This woman was in the third trimester, and you killed her unborn baby. Yep, and here's all the records, and you signed them, okay. And here's all the medical. That's black and white, Chuck. And they bungled that one. And now you have a situation where you have on videotape the director of the biggest Planned Parenthood in your area basically admitting to illegal acts.
Not basically, openly admitting to violating the law.
Acts. Yeah. And you are so poor at your job that the grand jury basically gives that a complete pass and indicts the key people who brought you the information because of a technicality. This doesn't surprise me. This is also, somebody asked me the other day, they're like, oh, well, I can't believe, you know, what happened in Houston? And I said, you know, stop yourself.
Yes.
Houston's also the same city that elected an openly lesbian mayor who actively went after pastors in her city.
Exactly. Houston is a screaming leftist enclave.
Right, it's become San Francisco on the Brazos.
Texas is a very conservative state, but it has very liberal enclaves. Houston is one of them. Austin is another one. Extremely liberal. And let me tell you something, Barry. Now, I've not served on a grand jury. My daughter has. So I'm speaking sort of secondhanded. However, my grandfather was an attorney. Again, secondhand knowledge. But the fact is that grand juries respond to what the prosecution wants done. It's not supposed to be that way. There's supposed to be all, quote-unquote, all the evidence presented. But as you and I both know, Barry, there's a way to positively present evidence. There's a way to negatively present evidence.
Yes, there are.
Paid to have somebody wear a wire in there to tell us exactly how this case was presented, because I would be willing to bet that this case was presented as, let's give these PP a pass, Planned Parenthood, and let's take a look at the actions of these guys, these outsiders who came in and exposed them, because after all, they presented fake IDs. And that is that they could go to jail for 20 years for essentially presenting fake driver's licenses as identification. Exactly. Give me a break. Does that mean that every kid who has a fake driver's license made up, so he can go when he's 20 years old, go out and have beer with his friends, needs to go to jail for 20 years? A part of this, of course, I'm going to expand this a little bit, and then we can tamp it back down. That whole 20-year thing, the violation of federal law, guess what, folks? That's Homeland Security stuff. That's designed to put people who hijack airplanes and crash them into buildings in harm's way, not people who are exposing people who are murdering, dismembering, and selling the parts of babies. That's what happens when you create laws that it bury. What's it called? The law of
unintended consequences.
Exactly. It's the law of unintended consequences. This is the same problem we ran into with RICO laws. What happened with RICO laws? It was designed to make it possible to get at drug dealers. What did it get used for? It got used to indict and steal the assets of and jail people who were involved in conservative political action. Especially things like Operation Rescue. Why is it that things that are designed to get at people who are anti-life are then turned on its head and used against people who are pro-life? That basically outlines these laws as tyrannies on their face. Now, I'm not saying it shouldn't be against the law to fake IDs, but why is it against the federal law? At what point did the federal government become in charge constitutionally of personal identification?
When they decided they wanted to, I suppose.
Because I don't see that power outlined in the Constitution anyplace.
No, it's probably outlined in the Patriot Act, which was blatantly unconstitutional on its face. But yet, George Bush, Bill Clinton pushed it and couldn't get it through, but George Bush managed to get it through, and now Barack Obama is making sure it stays in place and the power is expanded.
Bingo. Barry, this stinks to high heaven. This prosecutor who claims to be pro-life isn't. Because, of course, she may have turned it over to someone in her office who wasn't. And if she did that, then she did it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's in charge of who argues those cases. And as you mentioned, it has come out that I don't know if you brought this up yet. The person in the office who was.
Oh, yeah. A board member of Planned Parenthood of Greater Houston.
Yeah. They've got people on the board working in the prosecutor's office, on the board of Planned Parenthood. What would happen to someone who was on the board in the prosecutor's office of an organization that was indicted for felony acts in murdering infants and doing late term abortions? What would happen to that person?
Wow. Today, not much, it seems like.
Well, okay, but in normal circumstances,
they would actually be indicted and brought before a full jury and would most likely be found guilty of committing crimes and be sentenced.
Well, if someone was serving on the board of this organization, they would at least be required to resign their board membership. They would probably be required to resign their office because they were sitting as an advisor on a board
that was committing crimes. Chuck. You know, that's the whole point, or at least the fact that they should not have any, intersect with that particular case, because it raises the specter of a major conflict of interest and the inability to administer justice.
Exactly. It's a major conflict of interest. Honestly, we don't know who the attorneys are. The problem with grand jury proceedings is they're secret. You can't find out who the arguing attorneys were. You can't get at, even if you're indicted by a grand jury, Barry, you, at least in Ohio, you cannot get at the information that was given to the grand jury.
No.
Which is an absurdity. It never was designed to be that way. Never. Because you don't know who came in and perjured themselves. And don't kid yourself that prosecutors don't use perjured testimony in grand jury hearings. They certainly do. And they can get away with it because the proceedings are a secret. Nobody's ever going to find out unless somebody can figure out a way to get a judge to unlock the grand jury proceedings. My brother tried to do this in a case against him. Couldn't do it. Couldn't get at the, we demanded to see the grand jury records and they said no, and we couldn't get the judge to let us have them because we knew there was perjured testimony in the grand jury hearing. We knew it, but we couldn't prove it because we couldn't get the records. That's what goes on in these cases. That is what has happened to our legal system. This never used to be the case with the grand jury. The grand jury proceedings were secret until the indictments came out, and then you could get the records. You can't do that anymore. And if I'm not mistaken, that also is RICO.
I'm not sure offhand, but you're probably right.
We can get some attorneys to advise us on that. And, you know, if you know and you're an attorney, go to principledpolicy.com, www.principledpolicy.com. Go to the Contact Us page and write us an email. Let us know. Again, not an attorney. I'm a biochemist. Barry's not an attorney. He's a lobbyist. So, we don't know these things, but I'm pretty sure that that whole secret grand jury thing is relatively recent, you know, remaining a secret. But it basically gives prosecutors carte blanche. They can do anything. The grand jury is supposed to be sitting and representing the people of the state. Supposedly that's exactly what the prosecutor is doing. But what if the prosecutor is sitting as an advocate for a specific group, which it kind of looks like is happening in this case? Well, all the grand jury as a representative of the people can do is operate on the evidence presented and the way the evidence is presented.
Exactly.
And we don't know the way the evidence was presented because we're not allowed to know the way the evidence was presented.
Right. Now, it was interesting, Chuck, because, you know, those are the type of things, those are the type of questions people ought to start asking. When I was at the State House on Wednesday, because there were hearings and a vote on a bill that would basically keep anybody who provides or counsels for abortion or refers for abortions from receiving certain pots of money that the state administers through federal grants. And the Planned Parenthood lobby was out in force. There must have been 30 or 40 in their pink T-shirts. Men and women of pretty much every age. They trotted in three or four medical students from, of course, Ohio University, Athens. Not a surprise. Talking about how horrible it would be for all these, you know, poor women to die in the streets because they couldn't get to a Planned Parenthood. And Chuck, that's just part and parcel of the falsity of Planned Parenthood's, you know, public persona. The videos that Dalyden shot show what really is going on behind the scenes, that this is a multi-million dollar or billion dollar corporation who monetizes everything that they touch, including the bodies of the babies that they kill in abortion in order to maximize their profit potential. But again, many of these people, by the time the floor vote in the Senate on this bill came up, many of these, mainly young women. Now, it's sad too because it was mainly, you know, girls who were like in their early 20s, were wearing T-shirts with a sketch picture of David Dalyden's face with the word in letters in red across his face, indicted across it. Like that was some wonderful thing proving that they are as pure as the driven snow and innocent, and this is all politically motivated to just harm them, which is a meme that they're trying to set up in order when they file a lawsuit against these laws that are being passed that would bar them from receiving certain pots of taxpayer dollars. They will use that to say that, you know, it's harming their business and, you know, it's breaking contracts and things of that nature. You know, this is what they'll come to the courts with. Now, problem with that is that they've already, you know, there have been a number of other states that have already started going down this road. And in Utah, the Utah governor and the legislature barred them from actually receiving even Medicaid reimbursements. And they went to federal court and they sued. And of course, they got a temporary injunction from it being enforced against them initially. Now, a temporary injunction means that a judge finds that there may be enough in the case record that might prove that there was a problem with the decision by the governmental body, but they want to hear more information. And so sometimes they do that just in the sense of, well, let's just slow this thing up because there is real harm and it's wrong. We don't want the harm to be perpetuated. But if there isn't any real harm, it won't be so egregious that it doesn't take effect on the entity until after we get this heard. So they entered a temporary injunction against the state in Utah on Planned Parenthood, and of course they crowed that, you know, they found that, you know, it was illegal to do this, blah, blah, and that wasn't the case at all. And then that same federal court judge turned around, and we talked about this on a previous program, and turned around and said, and specifically, no, you know what, I'm going to rule for the state because, number one, you don't have a right to the taxpayers' dollars. It isn't like they're taking away your private funds. Oh, they're gosh. Taking. They're saying that they're deciding the use of where taxpayers' money goes.
Barry, that is the one thing with liberals that really bugs me. Really, really, really bugs me. And that is that tax money doesn't belong to the taxpayer. It belongs to the government. In fact, essentially, there are two ways to looking at your wealth and your income. Either it really all belongs to the government because we all belong to the government and the government allows us to keep a certain portion of that money, or that the money belongs to the breadwinner and the taxpayer, and with his consent, it can be distributed to certain places through his elected representative. And the attitude you just talked about is the idea that the money actually belongs to the government. It's not government right. money. It's taxpayers' money. And the taxpayers are the ones who decide where that money gets distributed. Definitely not the government's money, and they get to pick and choose who they bestow it on. Now, the problem is that people have gotten lazy and allowed their elected representatives to make those decisions without any input. Which is exactly what, of course, what you're involved in. That your lobbying yes, efforts are an attempt to get people like me represented in the state house so my tax dollars do not go to prop up a business in Planned Parenthood. Let's not kid ourselves. Planned Parenthood's a business. They're about selling abortion. That's what it's about. You can couch it in terms of breast cancer awareness and pap smears and all that stuff. But that ain't what it's about. It's about the money-making proposition of making sure that teenagers get the sexual information that they need to get pregnant and then come in and have an abortion. That's the bottom line.
And again, it's that last part that's really the key thing is have that abortion. That's what Planned Parenthood will say. That's only 3% of our business model. And so we look at them and say, well, if that's only 3% of your business model, then you should be able to survive without it. Now, Chuck, the paper of record in Central Ohio, the Columbus Disgrace, I mean Dispatch, sorry about that Freudian slip, basically has an article in the Thursday paper talking about the vote on this bill, which was House Bill 294, basically saying Planned Parenthood defunding bill may take time getting to Kasich. And there's a key thing here, and this kind of is going to segue us into our next segment we're talking about. But yes, that was the bill that I was following yesterday and spending all day on. They brought the bill in committee. They're, you know, Planned Parenthood brought in all these people. They basically one after the other, about a dozen different people testifying how horrible it would be for life if the government money, the taxpayers' dollars didn't keep flowing to them for these other programs because, you know, they're really the only option women have. And, you know, it was sad to note because I'm sitting there talking to some people in the audience saying, well, you know, wait a minute. There's 28 Planned Parenthood outlets in the state of Ohio, mostly in urban areas. There are over 290 community health centers that qualify because they provide all of the basic services that, women's reproductive health or whatever you want to call it need. Without counseling for or providing abortions. And you see, Chuck, that's what the bill would do. It would take the money, it would ban abortion providing organizations from being able to qualify to receive the money, and it would open the door for these other entities to be able to then access those dollars. And the pots that they chose to put into this bill equaled up to about $1.3 million to Planned Parenthood from the state of Ohio over the last two fiscal years, and that's per year. Now, Chuck, what we're talking about here is I know a lot of places like pregnancy care centers that do referrals, and they do, and I know the one in Athens especially because I'm very familiar with those folks down there. As a matter of fact, as a disclaimer, I've been a donor to the pregnancy care center in Athens, Ohio. They have a medical clinic. They provide screenings and STD testing and everything that Planned Parenthood says that women will not get should they not get this funding. But here it is in the Dispatch. This bill finally passed the Senate on basically a party line vote of 22-8. Right. There was one Republican member who was absent from the Senate yesterday. There was one Democrat member absent, was there and then left. So what their rationale was, I don't know, but it passed 22-8. Now, this was a House bill that had already passed the House, but since the Senate put a single amendment in there to do something about shifting some money to infant mortality prevention, which, you know, it's kind of interesting that we're now starting to understand that, you know, all this push that the liberals have about, reducing our infant mortality rate also now needs to be tied to reducing it by reducing the number of abortions in the state.
I was going to say, you know, maybe we need to force people to put into their statistics the abortions that have been performed.
Oh, exactly. But they won't touch that because they're talking about children who are quote unquote wanted and who have been brought into the world and then who die because, you know, they're put in their cribs wrong or the mother has smoked and smoking and it's caused defects in the baby or things of that nature. You know, that's what they're really talking about. Or you're having kids too close together and so you can't care. You know, it's all of the liberal mantra of, you know, it's your body, your choice. Instead of these are precious children. They are human beings. They should be given the rights of citizens in the state of Ohio. And yes, we should say that abortion is part of the infant mortality rate. But, okay, so the Senate passes this bill, and so what that means is the House has to concur upon it. Now, the House was meeting yesterday as well, Chuck. The Senate started very late. They were supposed to start at 1:30, and it was almost 2:30 before they got started with their proceedings because of some certain things. I think they were trying to make sure that the bill, a couple of bills that they had all the amendments on, things of that nature. It's not uncommon for a session to start late because of various things happening. And, of course, then they had, like, all of these specials where they were, you know, ball teams that had done something or students that had been, like, you know, top of their class about something. And they get recognized and they do introductions of guests of the senators. And then they have an invocation and opening prayer and they go into it. And then they had and this was where the Senate president decided to do this. And it was kind of out of place and out of order. And I'll leave it up to you and to our listeners to determine when I add this other piece in what was really going on. But they had a member who was leaving the Senate. He had announced that this week was his last week. He was resigning to go do private things. He was term limited anyway. And really, you know, background story politically, this is a way to engineer that his preferred pick for both the Senate seat and then the House seat that the House member who would take his Senate seat would take would be done before the primary. Well, that's not going to happen on the House side, supposedly. But the Senate will probably, you know, in the next week or two appoint the House member who's running for the seat and has a primary opponent. They will probably appoint that person to the seat so they can run as an incumbent and beat their primary opponent back. Which takes away the rights of the voters, but that's a sidebar, and we can get into that much later on another program. But so they did this, and it took over an hour, Chuck, for all of the speeches and everything, and it was, including the member himself getting up with two full pages of recognitions of each and every person he's ever worked with in the legislature.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Now, usually these things take maybe 15, 20 minutes. Three or four people will get up and speak, and that's it. This took over an hour. So now we're sitting there. It's almost 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they haven't even brought the first bill up on the schedule yet, which is this defunding bill, partial defunding bill of Planned Parenthood. Okay, well, they finally get to the bill, and you get up, and almost basically we heard from there are only 10 members of the Liberal Democratic Caucus, and one of them was not there, so that left 9. One of them had walked off the floor, so that left 8. 7 of them spoke against this bill. So the debate on this bill took a while, too. So it was, I mean, Chuck, I believe it was like 4:45 by the time the vote was cast on this bill. Now, the House had been meeting at the same time. They started at 1:30, and I believe that they were fairly much on time. The House has to concur upon this bill because a change is made by the Senate before it can go to the governor for signature. They could have done that yesterday afternoon by just recessing and holding people there until the Senate report came over, which is something that the House does on a fairly regular basis. And sometimes it's on big bills like, you know, budgets and things of that nature, and sometimes it's on smaller bills when they know it's only going to be, you know, 15, 20 minutes or an hour at the most, and they'll let their folks go and break or go to committees, afternoon committee hearings or things of that nature, and then they'll call them back into session to take up the matter from the Senate. The House didn't do that this time. They adjourned and told their, and they basically canceled the committees, adjourned and told their members to go home. And Chuck, they will not be back in until the week of February the 8th, which means at the very earliest that this bill can be concurred upon by the Ohio House of Representatives is the first day they have session back, which is the 10th of February.
Well, what's that all about? I mean, seriously.
Okay, well, here's the deal. What happens between January 27th, which was when the bill was passed yesterday, and February the 10th? What two things are happening around the country?
Well, there's a presidential debate.
Well, yeah, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but that's not the key thing. It isn't the debate. It's the fact of what the debate is about. It's about the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Both of which are happening before February the 10th. Both of which include a governor who says that he's pro-life, but whose key advisors and policy director were standing outside the Senate committee room reading over the amendments before they went into the bill in order to make sure that things didn't go into the bill that they didn't like. So now the Senate goes out of order with a special thing in order to draw out time long. The House breaks early and sends everybody home. So John Kasich doesn't have to have this bill put before him until after the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary.
Well, he's going to get killed in Iowa anyway.
Well, and it's interesting too, Chuck, because in this Dispatch article that I was talking about today, Jim Siegel of the Dispatch is no dummy when it comes to politics. And he really has got it nailed on this one, too. And he said basically that, you know, he says this whole idea is tied to that timing of those two votes that Iowa and New Hampshire are going to take. Because what is John Kasich doing in New Hampshire, Chuck? He's running as a...
Oh, as a in New Hampshire, he's a moderate.
He's running as a moderate. What's he doing in Iowa? He's running as a...
conservative.
Right. So he can go to Iowa talking about how he's going to sign this legislation, and he can go to New Hampshire saying, well, we're going to, when they send it to me, I'll take a look at it. Now, interesting, because you would think that this wouldn't be that big of an issue, but here we have right now, and I don't know where Siegel picked this up at because I didn't see it, but I'm glad he did, that after this bill passed, Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton actually commented on an Ohio legislative action.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Isn't that
interesting? Isn't it? Quote, during, and this is coming from Hillary Clinton, during his time in office, Governor Kasich has repeatedly attacked reproductive health and rights, signing 16 laws that have made it increasingly difficult for women to access vital reproductive health care and significantly decreased the number of health centers that provide access to safe and legal abortions. Quote, unquote. It's time for Governor Kasich to put the health and well-being of his constituents ahead of his own political ambitions and veto this bill to defund Planned Parenthood. Now, Chuck, think about it. To her, the only true health care is access to safe and legal abortions. Now, the key is, it's interesting that she's coming out like this, pushing John Kasich's buttons. Now, will that help him in Iowa? Of course it will. Will it hurt him in New Hampshire? Maybe.
Yeah.
But the key is, you know, he's surging in New Hampshire, supposedly, with endorsements that have just come out from the Boston Globe and the Concord newspaper there. I don't even know what the name of the Concord newspaper is because I don't read it. So he's supposedly riding this momentum wave going into the New Hampshire primaries that now show him setting in third place in New Hampshire behind who? Donald Trump, obviously, and Ted Cruz. So Kasich's team thinks they're right on line because now, and with Hillary attacking him, she's attacking him to basically keep him from being trying to dampen that momentum in New Hampshire. However, the attack also was two-pronged because he can use it in Iowa to say, look how conservative I am. Even Hillary Clinton knows I'm passing laws to, you know, stand for life, which he's not passing laws. The legislature passes laws, and he just signs them or vetoes them. He's not been, you know, handing them bills to pass up. What he does do, though, is vets things and say, well, you know, you can't do that because that goes too far. I won't support that. And, of course, his key people in the legislature, the Senate president, who's been out stumping for John Kasich ever since he announced in July that he was running for president. He's been all over the country with John Kasich stumping for him. Somehow goes out of order in order to slow up a bill so that they don't get to the vote on the bill until almost 5 p.m. And the House breaks when they could have just went into recess and waited on the bills, the report from the Senate to come over to them so that this bill would be on John Kasich's desk today, Chuck.
Doesn't sound too fishy at all, does it? Yeah.
And now, Chuck, honestly, I'll just be blunt. And people, this is where you're learning about Politics 101. This bill's an academic exercise to start with, because as soon as this bill moved from the House to the Senate, I guarantee you, and I'm going to go back and check the online checkbook from the state treasurer's office, that Planned Parenthood affiliates drew down every single dime out of those five pots of money that they could possibly draw down between now and the end of the fiscal year. Because even if the governor would have signed that bill today, Charles, here on, and this is Thursday, on January the 28th, that bill would not have taken effect until April the 27th, because it's a 90-day window before the bill takes effect. Now, the fiscal year in Ohio ends on June 30th. Do you think that Planned Parenthood will not take every dime out of those pots that they can qualify for before that bill goes into effect? But now they have an extra 14-day window, two extra weeks, to take money to supplement their abortion practices. Who's really pro-life here, Chuck?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Barry. This is a sad example of what happens when you value politics over principle.
Absolutely. And you know, and Chuck, you know, we have been trying to work with everybody, including the governor's office, including the legislative leadership, to get them to add language into that bill, which they didn't do, that would have prohibited abortion providers from being able to get Medicaid reimbursements from the Medicaid program when they do abortions, because under federal law, they're like, well, you know, you've got the Hyde Act and you've got this, that, and the other, and, you know, we can't get money for abortions. Yes, you can. Planned Parenthood, for what they consider therapeutic abortions, which I hate that term, that means if the baby was conceived as a product of rape, incest, or if the caring to term that baby would put the life of the mother in jeopardy, and a provider aborts that child, kills that child, and that woman is low income and qualifies for Medicaid services, that provider can bill the state of Ohio's Medicaid program for the cost of that abortion. And in the and in the last few years, that has been to the tune of nearly $3 million a year.
Wow.
That's the money we want to see dried up, but that's the money that they won't touch. Because which presidential candidate, Chuck, this is your pop quiz, which presidential candidate has hinged his entire budget on Medicaid expansion money?
Well, gosh, could that be, let me think, was it Ted Cruz? No. Was it Carson? No. Was it Carly Fiorina? No. Was it Jeb? No. Gosh, I think it was John Kasich.
Yes. Ding, 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 ding. You just passed your pop quiz.
Wow.
So people ask me sometimes, don't you hate being down here and doing all this? And most of the time I say, no, I really enjoy what I do for a living. I enjoy coming down here and standing up for what's right and trying to convince these people to do what's right. It's days like yesterday, Chuck, that make me hate my job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
or make me hate the environment my job has to operate in.
Yeah, you really do. You know, this is just it gives me an aside for a minute. I get very tired of Christians saying they're not involved in politics because it's dirty. You know what? Politics is dirty. And you know why it's dirty? Because there's no Christians or very few Christians in there to help wash it.
Well, and Chuck, that, you know, and I can hear it right now because there are a number of people who are in there who will say, now, wait a minute. I'm a Christian. I'm very strong in my faith. But yet those are the same people who, if the governor says, hey, why don't you just put that bill aside and we don't want to hear that anymore, they'd be like, okay. And they would drop a bill, a bill that they said that they're completely committed to. And I'm not speaking hypothetically here, Chuck. That happened.
Uh-huh.
It happened last session. And I'm not going to, you know, and I've talked about it before, but that individual just who stands upon their Christian beliefs and who I believe sincerely in their own mind, you know, is committed to the Lord Jesus Christ. It's just that they compartmentalize, Chuck. And this is honestly, I, you know, I'm feeling this deja vu because this is a recurring theme that I've had all week long, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I spoke to a men's Bible study in Bowling Green, Ohio on Tuesday morning, and they asked me about this whole idea of compartmentalization of your faith. And I had a chance to talk about the fact that we can't, as believers, compartmentalize our faith. We can't on Sunday go to church and talk about how we love God and we honor him and we obey his commandments and life is precious and marriage is between a man and a woman, and then go into our workplace, if that's the legislature or other places, on Monday or Tuesday and vote in favor of allowing Planned Parenthood to continue to kill babies, or vote on bills that would change the definition of marriage, or basically sit by the sidelines on our hands on our Christian beliefs while other people are passing bills that would do the same thing and would violate our consciences. Chuck, honestly, we don't have a lack of Christians in the legislature.
Yeah.
We have a lack of Christian fortitude in the legislature.
Well, we have an overabundance of presuppositional schizophrenia.
That a
temporary political expediency that really doesn't buy you anything, at the bottom line, it gets you nothing, is more important than the more permanent and long lasting effects of the things that you're failing to do, that you are doing for a political expediency or failing to do for a political expediency that will last perhaps a few months, maybe a few weeks. What you get out of it. Meanwhile, the slaughter goes on. The tyranny goes on. All these things that could be brought to a halt continue to go on because, well, it was more expedient to do this. And you wouldn't believe the pressure that was being put on me by the governor's people. And they threatened to primary me, and they threatened to pull out the party endorsement on me, blah, 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 blah. Good. Use it. Let them do it and use it against them. We see how effective that is being right now.
Ah, but you'd violate Reagan's 11th commandment that way, Chuck. We can't speak ill of another member of the Republican Party.
I'm tired of hearing that. Yes, you can.
Well, you know, I am too, and that's the reason why, you know, Chuck, as you know, and I think our listeners may know, I sit on the board of a statewide pro-life organization called Ohio Pro-Life Action. We are a no-compromise pro-life organization, unlike the state right to life entity. And I'm going to name names because, honestly, I talked to one of their legislative directors yesterday after this vote about getting Medicaid done, and she looks at me and goes, well, that's a really heavy lift, and we have to get past the constitutionality issues. And I said, what constitutionality issues? I said, under Medicaid contracts, the state has the flexibility to create the program the way they want to, including qualifying and disqualifying providers. Oh, well, you know, it's the other states. I'm like, yeah, and Utah just basically said they don't have a right to taxpayers' money. But you see, that's the right to life, state right to life organization's position on this. And part of the reason probably we didn't get the amendment in the bill yesterday was because, well, we're not ready to go there yet. That's too far down our 100-year plan.
The dreaded 100-year plan.
Which you and I both have heard unequivocally that is what they're operating under. So. But, you know, here that's the situation, Chuck. You know, you've got all these things, and you've got this group, but Ohio Pro-Life Action, our organization, we're surveying candidates, and we've had fairly decent response back so far on our surveys. But in our questionnaire, Chuck, we don't ask them just, are you for or against banning abortion? Are you for or against, judges who are pro-life? We ask those questions too, of course. But some of the key questions and buried in the middle of our survey are, if there comes a vote for leadership in your caucus and somebody stands up or who doesn't share your convictions on the life issue, do you vote in favor of them or not? Or would you campaign for and raise money for and endorse a candidate who doesn't share your views on life in your own party? Because we know those are the questions that cut to the marrow.
That's it. You're not no longer just doing a surface cut. You're actually cutting down into the bone and into the connective tissue.
And I've had candidates howl about those questions.
Oh, of course.
And I just look at them and say, if you don't completely fill out our survey and answer every question, you will not be endorsed. Period. I don't care how wonderful you are and how Christian you are and how much you've done to co-sponsor or sponsor bills. And vote, that's wonderful. That's great. But that's only part of the picture. The rest of the picture is what you're doing behind the scenes in your party, in your caucus. Are you promoting your Christian values and life there? Are you standing up against pro-aborts in your own caucus? And yes, the Republicans have those, and they parade as conservatives too. But because if you're not doing this, you don't deserve the endorsement of a real pro-life organization. See, the point is, pro-lifers have to get more politically cognizant. The problem is too many pro-life groups, including Ohio Right to Life, believe that they're politically savvy because they know which train to hitch their cart to.
Wow. Well, look.
See, a politically cognizant organization understands that you're standing there at the switch and you're the ones who are going to throw whether the train goes down track A or track B.
That's it. Look, we have to be able not just to have our faith, but we need to be able to apply our faith. And that's exactly what you're talking about. You're talking about candidates who basically take a look at their faith and what politics requires them, more or less requires them to do. And what are they choosing? Are they choosing their faith or their politics? Well, in the case, we have to think back to the book of Acts. Do we obey men or do we obey God? And the answer is you should be obeying God. If you're a politician and you're not saying I obey God, then you have a problem.
Absolutely.
Well, you know what, Barry? We had all this stuff laid out that we were going to cover.
Yeah, and it was all going to be over the debate that's happening on Thursday night in Iowa that Ted Cruz decided to skip, but he may still be there tonight. Who knows? But you know what? Honestly, I think this was a much more important issue as to who's going to be telling us what we want to hear to get a nomination so that they can play power, they can play power monger. I really think that talking about true life issues and getting people to understand what's really going on and why we need to stand up and say stop right now, and we're not going to accept these half measures anymore.
And hopefully it will help you choose a presidential candidate properly with the proper criteria. Well, that being said, we're out of time for this week. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And we ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.